Hello and welcome to the 21st edition of Risky Business, your weekly Australian security podcast sponsored by our friends at Cybertrust. I'm Patrick Gray. You may have noticed that we didn't run our intro music this week. Well, that's because we have some sad news to report and it just didn't seem appropriate. A regular guest on this program, Mr. Brian Dennehy, a security assurance engineer at Cybertrust, passed away the week before last. Brian's IT career spanned four decades, and he'd racked up over 20 years in information security before his untimely death. He was 58 years old, and he will be missed by friends and family. Still, the show must go on, as they say, so here's a preview of what's coming up on the podcast. F-Secure's Patrick Runold talks viruses. He's a Swede who works for F-Secure, and he was in Australia to visit clients and speak to the press. We spoke last week about the usual stuff, how viruses and worms are becoming more targeted, undetectable malware, virus writer motives, and so on. But it's always refreshing to hear these things said by a genuine AV expert. It's a good interview, and he'll be along shortly. We'll also chat to Cybertrust's US-based Apple expert about security concerns involving the iPhone. Yes, I know we're all sick of iPhone news, but I realised I was the only Australian journalist who hasn't done a piece on the iPhone, so we just had to bite the bullet and do it. That's coming up later. But first, as always, it's time for the news headlines with a somewhat under-the-weather Manir. Manir Katadia from ZDNet, their resident security blogger and expert. Manir.
I'm fine. I'm actually in bed.
Excellent. So there you go. Thanks to the masters of modern technology, we may still do our podcast. All right. So I guess the obligatory news yarn for today is that it's Patch Tuesday.
That's right. Apparently, Microsoft's got six patches in total. Three of them are critical.
Okay. Well, that's not really killer, is it? It's not head for the hills, but
certainly. I mean, compared to what we've been getting from Apple recently, it's like, you know, nothing at all. It's like, oh, six, okay, fair enough.
Yeah. Well, I suppose we're used to these updates, and it's nice that they're coming out regularly. So I think there were the critical holes were for Windows 2000.
2000, yeah. ST4, Excel 2000, and .NET framework.
Yeah, so I guess we'd just encourage all of our listeners to go out and patch them. But, I mean, they know that already. They're professionals. How dare we patronise them?
Yeah, there's a couple more, like, important flaws for Office and Publisher and XP Professional. And apparently there is even a moderately important one for Windows Vista, but that seems about it. Doesn't seem like there's anything too exciting this time.
What I love about the moderate and important ones is they usually stay that way until someone figures out how to exploit them properly. Then all of a sudden they're upgraded.
Exactly, yeah.
So probably do well to take care of those, everyone. Now, a little bit of an embarrassing moment for Microsoft when they've revealed that a hack that took place, a defacement that took place on their UK website, was actually the result of something as simple as an SQL injection attack.
I know. It is quite embarrassing, really. I mean, you know, you'd think that they'd be the masters of this and it'd have fixed all the little holes. But no, I guess if it happens to them, then everyone else has an excuse as well when it happens to them.
Well, I was about to say, it's like, you know, if you're out there, you know, running some sort of website on IIS and it gets owned, I mean, you can say, look, boss, look, it happens to Microsoft as well. You can't blame me. This stuff's hard. So, yeah. But, I mean, we had Jeremiah Grossman on the program. We've had him on a few times, actually, and he was saying that, you know, SQL injection problems are just still such a massive issue in the web application space. It was even behind the hack on card systems, which saw, you know, millions of credit cards.
I didn't realize that was a SQL injection. Yeah,
SQL injection. It's all a rage. It's all what the kids are all about.
It's been a problem for so long now, and I can't see it going away. And if Microsoft's still being done by it, then, you know, I think we're still a long, long way from this problem being fixed.
Now, you were going nuts before you were struck down with illness. Last week, you were writing a lot of stories about a mobile phone Trojan, or is that a somewhat controversial way of referring to this software?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I wrote about this about a year and a half ago, and it's called FlexiSpy, and it's an application that's run. It's a software company that's based out of Asia, and they create mobile phone bugging software. Now, one of the new things, they recently upgraded their software, and now it includes for Windows Mobile and for BlackBerry. So, but they've also upgraded the functionality of this thing. So can you imagine if you've got one of these BlackBerries, you need physical access to it, okay? So it is, you know, you do need to actually get hold of one for a few minutes and load this onto there. But once you've done that, you can actually turn on this thing's microphone whenever you feel like it. You can use it, you know, the cell phone thing, so you can figure out exactly geographically pretty much where it is. It's got all these different functions to it, and it's quite scary. And so we wrote a whole lot of these stories last week about it, and then actually got hold of BlackBerry as well, and BlackBerry were like, yeah, we don't care. It's not really a big deal at all.
So, like, this is a commercial piece of software, is it?
It is, yeah. You can buy it, and you actually buy it online. It just, I mean, I'm sure our readers will know about this already if they've, you know, kept their eyes open. I mean, it's something that has been around. But what the new part of this is that it now is available for BlackBerry, and I think that's a big deal. I mean, you know, France very recently, was it their MPs that said we're not going to use BlackBerrys anymore because we're worried about all of our data going over servers, which are in North America? And so they've stopped using BlackBerrys there. And I think this is another, like, you know, another big issue that anybody who's going to use BlackBerrys has to think about. That it does have its vulnerabilities. It can be tapped. It's not as though it's a great secure platform that, you know, every email you send from it is safe.
Yeah, well, I certainly wouldn't like anything like that on my phone. I can just imagine that it'd be all the rage with control freak boyfriends and girlfriends and things of that nature. I don't think it's a particularly savory or ethical piece of software unless the user is carrying it with their consent. So
the other thing is, the reason why these antivirus companies are actually flagging it as a Trojan is because they're saying that once it's loaded onto the system, you can't tell it's there unless you're really, really, you know, a real nerd and you're really detailed there. Then you may be able to find it. But otherwise, there is no sign that it's there. So I'm thinking, you know, any of your listeners out there, think about them. Have you been given a BlackBerry by your boss? How do you know it's not on there? What happens when you go for a job interview? They're a bit suspicious. Where is he going in a suit at 10 in the morning? That's a bit odd. Suddenly your microphone automatically switches on your BlackBerry or your, you know, Windows mobile phone or your Symbian phone. It's total control. It's very scary.
You're making me want to throw my smartphone out the window. You do realize that, right?
Well, luckily, I don't think anybody bought you your phone for you, did they?
Actually, it was a prize at a PR and journalist conference in the Hunter Valley. So you never know. Maybe PR companies are monitoring me.
Well, there's no reason why a PR company would want to monitor you at all, is there?
Oh, no, not at all.
No, not
not
at
like
all.
They care what we write about or anything like that.
I'd just be really, really careful now. If anybody gets, because, you know, you get these, like, envelopes with little CDs in them saying, hey, run this, it's great. People are going to be handing out phones, they're going to be handing out BlackBerrys and saying, hey, check this out, it's great. Next thing you know, nothing in your life will ever be secret again.
Well, I imagine, too, that once the functionality in this FlexiSpy stuff, you know, is well understood, you know, it's conceivable that someone could hack a phone via, you know, GPRS or Edge or 3G or whatever and clandestinely install that software on the handset. So, you know, you might not even need physical access. I don't see why you'd need physical access to the handset to be able to install
it. It's like when we're talking about the Microsoft ones, which, you know, they're just important bugs and they haven't been escalated yet. It's because nobody's actually found a way to actually exploit it. You're so right there. As soon, I mean, it's just going to take another little vulnerability. Someone's going to have to discover that. And then that's it. This will suddenly become a full-on huge problem.
Now, before we move on to the next item, I just have to note, you know, when talking about security, you get a lot of your color back.
I got really excited by this.
You did. You were sounding mighty bloody crook at the start of this, but talking about bugging BlackBerrys, and you, I reckon you're getting well. It's good. Get the old juices flowing again, mate.
Excellent. Good. Another okay. Sip of orange juice. All good.
Now, we spoke when this story first broke. We spoke about Oracle's charges against SAP's subsidiary Tomorrow Now, which you know, where they alleged that Tomorrow Now had hacked into their servers. Well, I don't even know if that's what they alleged, but that's definitely how the media reported it, right? So now,
but it's the best explanation, though, isn't it? Because SAP has now admitted, SAP has admitted, I like calling them SAP. SAP has admitted that some inappropriate downloads of Oracle fixes and support documents occurred.
Now, look, I don't know if you caught it this week, Muneer, but I wrote a blog post about this on
I haven't read that.
On hydropinion.com, and okay. It was entitled New Rule, It's Not Hacking If You Have the Password. Okay, because these guys were using Tomorrow Now is a company that does support contracts for Oracle software. So they will support your Oracle apps. What's been alleged to have happened is that they've taken the logins from Oracle customers who have then signed up with Tomorrow Now, logged in on behalf of the customer, and then downloaded a bunch of stuff which they really shouldn't have been downloading. And it gets really interesting when you realize that there was one document where Tomorrow Now is alleged to have taken this Oracle document and just changed the logo to their own logo and then distributed it to customers like it was their own material. So I think that's more at the root of the problem. But I guess this didn't turn out to be such a big hacking issue. It's more of a, you know, misappropriation of intellectual property sort of issue. I guess we'll just keep an eye on the courts and, you know, see what happens. But it doesn't look like, in fact, they had hired teams of black hat, you know, evil black hats to actually sit there and troll through Oracle servers and, you know, exploiting stuff. It just looks like a case of...
It was definitely nothing like that, but, well... It doesn't seem like it is like that, but we definitely have to keep our eye on this and see where it's going. But it is a bit strange, though, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it is, and it's if what Oracle is alleging, if what Oracle is alleging is true, then it's definitely poor form, at the very least, and most likely illegal. So we'll just have to see what happens in the way of a settlement, or if there's anything proven. But despite the fact that it's sort of moving away from being a security story, I think we will keep on covering that one because it's certainly interesting. That's it for this week's news. But before we go, mate, we just want to wish you very, very well and wish you a speedy recovery.
We'll just like talk more about blackberries during the week and I'll be fine.
Excellent. Okay, mate, you get well and we'll speak to you next week.
All right, thanks, mate.
That was ZDNet Australia's Munir Kataria, and we wish him a speedy recovery. Normally we'd speak to someone from Aussert at this point in the podcast, as regular listeners might know, but you may have noticed the team from Brisbane have been absent from Risky Business for a few weeks. Well, it's mostly because Carl Hanmore has been spending a lot of time traversing the globe, and McLennan Starkey, our other Aussert buddy, hasn't been available. Today, Carl's in the US, and Macca is hopping on a plane to Sydney. Just thought I'd explain this week why they're not appearing in the show. Anyway, up next is our feature interview with Patrick Runald. He created F-Secure's first automatic virus definition tool in 1998, and he's a member of the Association of Antivirus Asia Researchers, an organisation obviously named by someone with a fairly loose grip on grammar. He runs the company's Malaysian AV Lab. Now, Patrick, it seems the days of the, you know, big viruses and big worms are long gone. Is that a fair assessment, or do you think there's still a few big ones left to go?
No, I think we've seen the last ones. It's all about flying under the radar. It's all about making money. So obviously, the bad guys out there doing this don't want to be detected.
But surely it's not just a question of motive. It's also got a lot to do with the fact that, you know, the average home computer is a lot more secure these days.
Well, it is a bit more secure, but still we see horrendous vulnerabilities every now and then that could possibly be used for really, 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 really bad things.
Mm.
It's just not in their interest nowadays to infect millions and millions of pieces at the same time.
So they want to go for a few, keep it under the radar.
Yeah, because if they do, then media hopefully won't pick up on it, and users will be unaware that this threat is actually still ongoing, and actually even worse now than it was a few years ago.
So you think they're trying to lull us into a false sense of security?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, that's interesting, because it would seem to be a fairly high-level strategy then, wouldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the whole motive of viruses have changed. We all know, I mean, it used to be teenagers writing viruses, because it was fun or for the technical challenge or for bragging rights. And nowadays, it's all about money. It's organized gangs writing viruses to facilitate and build networks of infected machines so that they can send out spam, do phishing attacks, and host malicious websites and do all sorts of nasty things.
Now, I suppose particularly in your role, you'd find yourself up against these guys almost working in direct competition because, as I understand it, there's Trojan providers out there who operate more or less like software companies who guarantee to keep their Trojans undetectable by software such as that made by your company.
Correct.
Yeah. So is it really a question of just getting a sample of that stuff sooner than anyone else so that you can write a signature for it? Or are you working more on techniques to do generic detection?
We do both. I mean, a lot of the work we do still revolves around signatures for the simple reason that signature-based scanning is still the fastest way of scanning a file. It just takes a few milliseconds to check it for a signature, and if we find it clean, we'll let it run. But obviously, there are so many new variants coming out all the time, and we have these gangs providing, quote, undetectable, unquote, Trojans, and they even provide you with guarantees that it will stay undetected, which means that they will give you new variants if someone starts to detect it. So we are working a lot on generic detection and behavioral-based engines to be able to actually analyze the code in runtime to see what it actually does to your system. And if it does something bad, we'll be able to block it, even though we have no idea what it is.
But the fact remains that there is a lot of stuff out there that no antivirus software will pick up. I mean, do you think that this means we need to fundamentally rethink the way that we approach this threat?
Well, I mean, there's always a way to detect one particular file, and there always will be. But there are ways that the bad guys can use to try to circumvent our scanners, and some of them are more or less effective at doing this. But I think the strategy we have is right. Obviously, if we can make it so that we can sort of shut down everything or sort of lock down everything, that would be even better.
Mm.
But users expect flexibility, and they want to be able to install their third-party software, such as games and
Dancing Bear screensavers.
Things like that, exactly.
Yeah.
And funny WAV files and funny screensavers and all sorts of stuff. So it has to have a certain amount of openness to it. Vista is far better than XP because at least it will give the user a warning if something is doing something.
But don't you think people get worn out by those warnings because
yeah.
they're just always having to click yes, do what I want to do, do
After
what
while,
I want to do.
I think most people will just click yes.
Yeah,
I mean, I've installed a few Vistas, and there are a whole lot of yes clicking to do.
Well, I remember back in the days of DOS, you know, you go to delete a file, and you just. You know, enter, then Y, then enter, you know, and
yeah.
it was such a reflex that a couple of times I actually accidentally deleted files that I didn't want to because, you know, no one ever really sits there and looks at the confirmation and ponders it, do they?
Yeah, yeah, and I still use DOS prompts for a lot of my work. But,
yeah.
yeah so
were, you a little bit, were you a little bit disappointed by Vista, or do you think it was really a revolutionary step?
I don't think it's a revolutionary step. I think it's far better than XP.
Mm.
It's not the one solution to all of our security problems, but it's a good step towards better security. But we also have to realize that these guys creating malware are still focusing heavily on XP and Windows 2000. And once we have an enough big user base running Vista, they're going to start to change their focus.
Now, while we're on operating systems, I have a somewhat, for some reason, I have a really perverse interest in OS X security. I just, I'm fascinated by it, mm-hmm. probably because of the way the company markets the operating system. But we've seen a bit of a deluge of vulnerabilities in OS X.
Yeah.
And it's been my long-held belief that the reason we haven't seen any malware targeting the OS X platform is simply because the computers don't really have the market share that the bad guys want. Is that a theory you'd agree with?
I agree to 100%.
Okay.
Which is the same reason we have, for example, mobile viruses targeting Symbian and not Windows Mobile.
Mm.
It's because Symbian is the market leader. I'm pretty sure that if Linux or OS X had the same market share as Windows have, the situation would be reversed.
Mm. Do you think that the bad guys are probably working on some malware for other platforms? Because OS X, I mean, it's a 4% market share, but it's completely untouched. And I imagine there's a lot of Macs out there without security software installed because everyone's feeling complacent. Do you think that it's possible some malware writers out there could see it as a target,
well,
as a juicy target?
We've seen a few already.
Trojans, or are you just general messing around?
No, we've seen a few malware for OS X. There's something like 3 or 4. But it was a while ago. It was actually over 2 years ago since we saw the last one. So it's sort of like probing steps to see, you know, can this be done? And yes, it could be done.
Mm.
But again, the user base is not there to make it work for them sort of economically.
Yeah, I guess they're a victim of their own failure to penetrate the market.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if you're aware of this, but over the weekend there was a new banking code of practice introduced in New Zealand, which would see consumers liable for fraud if their computers were found to be insecure. So if they reported a fraud to the bank, traditionally they'd be reimbursed for the amount stolen out of their bank account if they were a victim of a phishing scam or a keylogger or something. But now the banks over there are saying, hey, no, unless you're running the latest operating system patches and you have security software installed, we might not actually pay you. Do you think that's a trend we're going to see more and more of around the world?
I believe so. I mean, I know for a fact there are banks that aren't paying out at all. It depends on which country you're looking at.
Yeah.
I think it might sound a bit harsh to, oh, we want to go in and check your computer. But it actually makes sense. There are ways to protect yourself. I'm not saying there are foolproof ways to protect yourself against phishing. If you really, really want to give away your details, obviously you're always going to be able to.
Mm.
But if you are running, if you are installing patches, which you don't really have to do yourself, you can have Windows install them for you automatically.
Mm.
you can have your antivirus product obviously update automatically, and most other applications can update automatically as well, like QuickTime or WinZip or Office or all of these different applications. So there's really no reason not to be secure.
Yes, but surely the banks could, instead of just throwing the problem towards the consumers, surely they could invest more heavily in things like two-factor authentication and other sort of verification technologies, which would render simple information disclosure type attacks like phishing or even keylogging, it would render them quite useless.
It wouldn't render them useless. We've seen attacks against two-factor authentication as well.
But that's token-based authentication. I mean, yes. Something out of band like SMS or voice verification or something like that?
Yeah, that would make it more difficult. I agree. Obviously, the bank has a huge responsibility in this. If they just use a static username and password and blame everything on the user, that doesn't make sense at all.
So you think it should be a combination between user responsibility and the banks actually providing some technologies which are beyond a username and password?
Absolutely. I think the bank has to take the first step in this. They have to secure their own act first before they start laying the blame on the user. But if they actually are doing all of this and the user still gets scammed, then the user actually has some responsibility in this. But it should be, first and foremost, the bank's responsibility. They have to look after their customers.
Now, look, it seems that your line of work has got a lot more interesting over the last few years, because the bad guys aren't targeting the big scores anymore. They're not going for the banks. They're not going so much for the clearinghouses. They seem much more interested in going for clients. Do you think that's true, or do you think that they're focusing their efforts on both?
I think they're focusing their efforts on both. Different gangs might be doing different things, but I agree. We have a very interesting job at our hands. I have never had a boring day at the office. But I mean, we see gangs whose aim is to build botnets, the biggest botnets, and use that for all different things, even rent it out to other gangs who are specializing in phishing or DDoS attacks. And we have gangs who want to do completely opposite. They want to do targeted attacks. Send out one specific Trojan to one specific recipient. So there are different groups out there doing different things, specializing in different things. But the aim and the end result is the same for all of them. It's all about money.
Well, I guess it looks like your job is going to stay interesting for some time to come. Patrick Runald, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
That was Patrick Runald of security company F-Secure. It's time for this week's sponsor interview. CyberTrust pays our bills, God love them, so each week we get one of their experts on the show. This week it's Kevin Long, a US-based consultant who specializes in all things Apple, and we're talking about the iPhone. Kevin, interestingly, we've seen some warnings coming out of Gartner saying that the iPhone could present some security problems in the enterprise.
I don't know that it's anything significant. It's nothing to worry about. The vulnerabilities that will be introduced will probably be on par with those that we've already had for years in other handheld devices. So you can pay attention to the alarmists in this instance, but from a security standpoint, I am not that concerned, and the other members of the risk intelligence team that I work with, we just don't have a lot of great concern about the iPhone at this point.
Now, we don't actually have them here yet, but one of the things I understand about the iPhone is that it only operates on GPRS. Can that possibly be right?
It does only operate on the that AT&T network. That's definitely a concern for folks. There were some claims of there being a speed bump, but it just, for where you're coming from, for people in Europe, when they look at the speed of the data plan, I think they would be turned off by that. And that is the only thing available. My understanding is that it's a 5-year exclusive contract with AT&T, and that's the network that they have. And it's to me, it's the edge network. That's what they call it. But you're right, it's GPRS, and those are the speeds that iPhone users are going to be looking at for data.
Now, surely the bad guys would probably prefer to hack something faster.
I think more something cheaper, but faster is probably an issue as well. Yeah, everybody is saying this, and I would tend to agree. There's been so much hype about this, for an electronic device, and could it possibly live up to it? I don't know if it would, but I'd be interested to see one.
Now, I know some security researchers have already set up little fuzzers like web web server fuzzes that they can point their iPhone to and try to get it to crash. And I understand that at least one researcher that I know has actually managed to crash the version of Safari or whatever the mobile browser is on the iPhone. Do you think we're going to see a lot of research into security vulnerabilities on the iPhone platform? And do you think that'll stimulate interest in mobile vulnerability research in other areas as well?
Yeah, there's been some research already in mobile vulnerabilities, and there are a lot of people playing with it. There will be iPhone security issues reported. The question is, how important are those issues that people are talking about? The folks who are reporting these things, they want to get their names out there. And so regardless of how important their discovery is, they're going to wave their hands about it. So a lot of people will be looking to make a name for themselves, and they're going to be putting things out there about iPhone security. Some of the findings will be significant. We're certainly keeping an eye on those, because in some cases, things that affect the iPhone will affect other handheld devices. But our team just has not been concerned about the vulnerabilities introduced into an organization by those types of mobile devices. They just, when it comes to malware and things like that, it just hasn't been a real live issue yet. And the bottom line is, if you're focusing your attention on these types of vulnerabilities and things that are trendy and ignoring basic techniques, best practices like default deny, you're going to be behind where you should be.
Although the Gartner report did make one fairly pointed criticism, which was that because there's no security software for this platform, it makes it a little bit difficult if organizations wind up using the iPhone, makes it a little bit difficult for them to ensure that it complies with their guidelines for securing mobile devices. Do you think that's a fair enough stab at them?
It depends on what type of security software you're talking about. If you're talking about antivirus software, our stance on that is that you introduce more risk to your device by running antivirus software on it than, and this is certainly not true of all platforms, it's true of OS X, and it's at this point it's likely true of the iPhone as well. You're going to introduce more risk to the device by running that software than you would be by not running it.
What's the logic there, that there might be vulnerabilities in the actual AV detection itself? Well,
antivirus software runs at a very deep level. Mm. And if you look at OS X, for instance, the reports of people losing data to a virus or some piece of malicious code that would have been stopped by antivirus is little to none. Mm. But the data loss due to people running antivirus software on OS X systems numbers in the hundreds, if not thousands. And so by running antivirus software on your machine, you're introducing more risk than your machine would have if you did not run it. And so at this point, the iPhone, you're safer if you don't run that software on your machine.
Kevin Long, thank you.
Thank you.
Well, that's it for this week's show, which is dedicated to the memory of Brian Dennehy. We'll be back next week with more news and analysis. And Brian, wherever you are, I hope you've got internet access, because this one's for you. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Did someone call my name? Like a distant drum is beating. Or is it just another dream of long ago? I dance again, I am spinning. In the light I am living. And I can feel the power rushing through. Once upon a time, I could do no wrong. For the candle flickers, flame is never gone. To my brilliant feet, they obey. I hear the crowds roar. Is it a game of chance or merely circumstances? jack to a king and bell, then you have to pay to play. The world, it won't wait for you. It's got its own things to do. The sun's gotta rise and drive another night away. And as I listen to the silence, I can hear thunder in the distance. To my brilliant feet.